true outcomes they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Want to win that score sheet? You're gonna want to stay with Three True Outcomes.
Howdy. Welcome to the Three True Outcomes Score Sheet Baseball Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus. I'm your host, Ian Lefkowitz, and I only travel by emoji. Joining us this week, from Livonia, Michigan, he's the coxswain of his banana boat. It's Ben Murphy. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well as well. And joining us from the nation's capital, we have locked him in his house until he makes a decision. It's Jared Weiss.
Hello.
Is this an NBA joke?
Yes.
Yes! I got it.
Well done.
Jared, did you get it?
Yeah, sorry. Oh,
just me, okay. Does that mean that Jared is DeAndre Jordan?
Well, I don't know. So he comes to a conclusion and then backs out of it 2 days later. It
seems very un-Jared-like.
He doesn't know what to think until... groups of his friends have to descend upon his own city in order to convince him. Perhaps taking away phone privileges. How do you feel? I'm going to spoil it. I do have a backup, but the indecision, easily the best thing I saw this week.
I don't think you have to have a backup.
Yeah, just the hilarity. Oh, my God. Paul Pierce and his JPEG of a rocket. You know, watch it. Like, if you experience that in real time, it was the best day in NBA Twitter history. Full marks to NBA Twitter. But we should talk about an important sport.
Rugby, right? Y'all. Rugby.
We'll save your ultimate podcast for the baseball offseason. Going to talk baseball.
There is an ultimate podcast. It's done by one of the ultimate magazines.
Is it called The Ultimate Podcast?
No.
It had better be.
It's called Deep Look.
Well.
I know.
That's a reference I don't get.
Missed opportunities.
Now that she's on the other foot.
Yeah. How does it feel?
Well, okay, now I know. anyway, thanks for joining us this week. We are pleased to be back on what we assume will be a regular schedule. Thank you. We look forward to serving you with delightful score sheet content this week. We're going to look at a couple teams. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the results from last month's draft. But first, I see in our show notes random banter about the All-Star game. Boy, what do you think about the All-Star game, guys?
So, I thought the Bryce Harper home run derby thing was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Also then followed up by the Chris Bryant, his dad, giving like the speech / interview to say how excited he was to pitch in the home run derby was kind of funny. I would like to know, now that like the voting has shaken out and like all the brouhaha about the Royals was, it might have been much ado about nothing. Maybe that's part of what you could chime in on. But I'm curious as to whether you guys think it was real votes that got overwhelmed or were, like, enough of them canceled out. I don't know if they ever saw or said for sure. I didn't see. I wasn't paying attention. But there seems to be some conspiracy theories floating around.
Oh, sure.
So, like, to what extent do you guys buy into these conspiracy theories?
100%. Come on, Kansas City, Google Fiber. Got that terabyte.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't imagine MLB being capable of any sort of conspiracy ever.
You think they want to, but they couldn't pull it off?
There's no way they could pull it. Are you kidding me? No.
The last thing I wanted to bring up, and if you guys have banter about All-Star, I'm interested, but bigger snub, A-Rod or Kershaw? I'm going A-Rod for sure. That Kershaw guy has a under 500 one loss record.
Yeah. There's no DJ LeMahieu.
It's true.
you know, well, as I mentioned, I think in passing in one of our prior episodes, I obviously root for chaos in every All-Star game because I don't care.
So the like tie was but basically it, your
Ian,
dreams.
This time it counts though.
Sure. Okay. So this time it counts. I understand the joke. Okay. But like when people get offended that like the Royals are going to like cheapen the All-Star game because it counts now and like how dare they, you know, how dare they impugn the integrity of the All-Star game? Like
okay. Maybe that's why DJ LeMahieu is starting because the Royals are trying to sabotage. I know.
Before this time it counts. The World Series home field advantage, which, by the way, is not a thing, was decided by alternating leagues each year. Who cares? So it's not the All-Star game. Okay, like, it's I Ching or the, like, that World Cup octopus decides who the... I don't care. It's just a simple fake decision. You can... They are not, like, ruining anything of importance. So, yes, if they want to vote for Kansas City Royals or Banana Slugs or like the All-Star team, it's great. Great. I would love to see it. And I would love to see Bob Costas have to justify it.
I mean, that's fair, but I guess I will say, you know, when we look at players' careers, you know, a lot of times we'll say, oh, you know, he made three All-Star game teams or he made zero All-Star teams. I think it's something that, you know, in the moment doesn't really matter so much, I agree, but it is a point of reference.
Well, people used to say that, but maybe now they'll stop or, you know, we're approaching a time when they'll stop. Just like I think we're approaching a time when whether or not somebody made the Hall of Fame will be less remarkable.
No, baseball fans are always going to argue about that.
They'll argue about it, but that doesn't mean it'll be as significant as it is or was.
Also, Lance Carter having an All-Star stripe on his page baseball reference page is awesome. It's hilarious. It's like a little private joke that I have with myself every time I look at it, which is probably more than one would expect.
They're probably wondering why you're stalking him. Sean Foreman's got like metrics that he's doing. He's like, this one IP in New York City keeps hitting this player card.
Yeah. It's, I know, right. There are some pages that have like how many people have visited, and this one's going to be like you. But, you know, I think, I mean, it's disappointing because like the intellectual side of me doesn't think that All-Star games should be decided by how you do in the first 4 weeks of the season, which is DJ LeMahieu's entire All-Star justification or on merit.
Candidacy?
Yeah. But a bigger part of me thinks it's hilarious to have him there. So that's the war that I have.
I missed this, but I was watching Around the Horn, or listening to the podcast, rather, and I wanted to bring this up. It harkens back to the Bryce Harper thing. You guys know who Woody Page is? He's, like, from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, well, once Bryce heard that his dad Ron couldn't pitch, he should have called up Kyle Kendrick, because Kyle Kendrick's given up, like, 30 home runs so far this year, something like that. And I was like, I know who that is because I remember Ian talking about how he was the Rockies opening day starter. It's like, yep.
Solid joke.
Lots of innings, lots of innings. Well, I mean.
Yeah. I care about the Futures game roster, and yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
I care more about the All-Star game than I do about celebrity softball.
Oh, I care about celebrity softball.
I've now watched Celebrity Softball twice.
So good.
No. No, that's not true. Because, like, it's really fun for, like, 30 seconds to be like, wait, that one guy from Desperate Housewives is a celebrity?
Yeah. I was going to say,
He's in it for so many years.
I missed out on putting being enough a celebrity to play in the celebrity softball game as one of my life goals. I think it's too late now.
Well, you could still have that Cordova Street career.
Oh, Urban Meyer is playing this year?
Really?
Yeah, they added some more people.
Oh, my God.
Vlad Guerrero is going to be pretty good. You have to admit that.
That will be good.
And Ian, Miles Teller is coming and playing, so tell me this is not going to be good.
I mean, I do have a theory as to who the coach of the celebrity softball team should be. Are you swinging or are you dragging? The first celebrity softball game to draw blood. I'm into it. All right, have we exhausted our all-star banter?
And then some.
All right, sorry everyone. Why don't we banter some more about your all-stars, the players you have taken in the 40th and 41st rounds of the draft? And since we're at the halfway point, we're kind of taking stock and checking in on some of the players in each league who are going fast in a lot of drafts, and see if we could pull out some trends. Ben, you did us the courtesy of scraping together the results of the most recent draft.
Yes.
I guess.
Yes, I did.
I guess I am fishing for a yes or no answer to a question that I know the answer to.
Not only that, one that was not actually a question, just a statement in classic interview form.
Well, I learned from Steve Lyons.
Steve.
I learned from the best.
Yeah, and I guess for those of you that are new or don't remember, we basically just brute force our way through all the score sheet leagues and go through all the player IDs and figure out which ones are on rosters now that weren't before. So in terms of like the nitty-gritty details for tonight, we're looking at the difference between rosters on June 16th and July 1st for the purposes of measuring that supplemental. And then basically rosters as of July 1st then for measuring percent owned. And we categorize it based on the league designation. So each league is designated like BL, AL, or NL. And then, of course, each player has like an ID designation. So, of course, for the most part, the AL guys are only in AL leagues and vice versa. But every once in a while, especially with crossovers, you see some interesting blips, especially around the beginning of the season. I think mid-season drafts generally exactly what you'd expect. So.
Yeah. Now, if I was continuing to be a sideline reporter, my next question would, of course, be, tell me about building that. But instead, I'm going to ask, were there any players you saw who jumped out to you? I don't know if you want to go by league or if you have
stories
in mind.
We can go by league if you want. I think one of the things that merits prefacing here is, you know, we had previewed these rounds on this supplemental a couple of podcasts ago because this is basically the rounds where the June MLB Rule 4 draftees become eligible in almost every score sheet league. And that means that these supplemental rounds tend to be populated with primarily guys that were just drafted. So I think in some sense it's interesting to see that certain players are more popular than others when it comes to the amateur draftees. But then also there are a number of non-amateur draftees that were very popular in these supplementals. And I guess there's probably a bigger picture thing around, you know, a few of them were primarily in the AL, so it seemed like the AL maybe had weaker amateur draftees, I'm inferring, but don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a place we could start. That's sort of a good big picture takeaway for the score sheet owners. But if you want to talk about specific players, the top of that AL list has Joey Butler, Mike Montgomery, and Robbie Ray on it. Oh, no, I messed up Robbie Ray. Sorry, that's Alex Bregman, who was a draftee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess it's just Joey Butler and Mike Montgomery. Is there some reason you can think why those two guys would have been popping off of AL supplemental boards recently?
Yeah, they both got jobs, and they both performed over their heads. And they both went through the Rays player development system. The Rays know how to pick them. I mean, Joey Butler is like a classic, just a classic score sheet round, you know, supplemental round first pick. Just a guy who has had, you know, I would say a pretty strongly undistinguished minor league career. Came up through Texas system, and he got a cup of coffee, I want to say with the Rangers too, but just like floated around, you know, end of bench guy, and has had a sustained run of success with a fluky BABIP, and is going to ride that into the score sheet playoffs.
Nice.
And maybe the real playoffs with the Rays too, as their, you know, DH and number four hitter, because that's how the Rays like to play it these days. Mike Montgomery was also he's someone, now that we have a history, I can say I was recommending last year back when he was with the Rays.
He came over from the Royals, right?
Yeah. In some trade where, like, there was like this rookie who came over to the Rays and like a pitcher went back. I forget
the
details.
Let's not talk about it.
I forget the details of that trade. But
Jake Odorizzi, y'all.
Yeah, he was, so Montgomery was traded on this offseason for somebody of minor. Oh, Erasmo Ramirez, of course. Who could forget Erasmo Ramirez, the second best Erasmo Ramirez in Major League Baseball history. He might actually be the best Erasmo Ramirez in Major League Baseball history. Let's look that up. In the meantime, Montgomery, I actually got to watch him a few times this month for some weird reason. Obviously he's not keeping up the 162 ERA, but you know, this is kind of player I kind of expected him to be, the third, fourth starter, you know, in a good spot with a good defense behind him. It's a different good defense than I expected, but I see no reason why, you know, you could, if you add two runs to this and make it a 3.6 ERA, like, that seems right. I think in a 13-team league, you know, you may have a borderline keeper here. I don't know. I think a lot of starters get kept. I think he's going to be one of the best 45 starters in the AL. 40? You know, that's kind of at the borderline. So, you know, if you went for Mike Montgomery instead of a prospect, I'm not convinced you would regret that.
Erasmo Ramirez, by the way, was the 20th most picked AL player in the supplemental.
Yeah, he's really been putting it together since that first month or two. Let's see. So Erasmo Ramirez has. Well, I have Baseball Reference up. Sorry to the home team. Has 1.1 career WAR now, and Erasmo Ramirez has 1.8 career WAR. So that's getting pretty tight. I'm looking forward to tracking that for the remainder of the season. In the meantime, Jared, did you have any thoughts?
Well, I guess I was going to, and this is maybe more for you too, Ben, looking over this sort of list when you're thinking about the value of the supplemental round in terms of, you know, trading for, trading away. Obviously, you've got the top few draft picks, the Dansby Swanson, Brandon Rogers, Alex Bregman types. After that, you know, this draft in particular fell off. But looking at the other types of players who were drafted, the former prospects turned good, like Mike Montgomery, the random outfielder guys like Joey Butler. Anyway, my question is, you know, how do you value? To me, it sort of seems like these picks aren't super valuable, that, you know, you're not getting anything great with these, especially later in the first round or second round. So would you try to package these to people, or how does this influence your opinion of their trade value?
Ian, do you want to go first?
No, because it was pointed to you. I wasn't expecting that.
I have an answer. I mean, I can.
Oh, go for it.
So I think generally, Jared, I am inclined to agree with your implied supposition, which is that the round 40 picks are somewhat overvalued in trade. I certainly think that they are generally valued higher than they should be, and sometimes in some leagues, depending on the rookie protect rules, some of that is justified because it might be the only way you can get the 1-1 pick, because he's going to be drafted with that first or second pick in the 40th round, and then he's going to be kept until he like totally flames out for 3 years in a row. And since a lot of score sheet leagues allow you to keep a guy forever, if that's the only way you're going to get that guy and he turns into Troy Tulowitzki or what have you, you know, if you're thinking of like Brendan Rodgers' future, potential future, then obviously that's worth it. But there are so many things that have to go right for that to happen between you being in the right spot in the draft and making the right selection with the guy and then the guy panning out to be that superstar that, you know, at least for us, I think, and for most of the folks listening to the podcast, I'd venture to guess, could do the same sort of math. By the time you get realistic about your chances to hit on all of those different components of that lottery, you're probably better off tossing the 40 for like a 37 and a 39 or something, where you can add useful reliever depth earlier in the season, get more innings out of them, and be able to use them for longer, rather than trying to take your chances on, you know, gambling on one of those early round picks. And there's probably some type of inefficiency there, especially if you're in a league where you feel like those 40th round picks are rated that highly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's right. And succinctly, like, I don't think that a contender's 40th round pick has much value. And since contenders are the ones who are probably most likely to be dangling it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You have to land the pick in the top five, or it's not going to be worth anything, or not worth any sort of surplus. Then it's just a mediocre reliever.
Yeah, and someone dangling their round 40 pick to you in February seems pretty dicey.
Yeah, or it could be like, you know, April or something, and they want to pick up, you know, a pick in the first sup, or maybe you get to this point in the season, you realize that your team's better than you thought they would be, and you trade the 40 for, you know, a 41 and a 43 or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But generally, the chance to add that depth is probably worth it.
Yeah, more or less. I agree completely. Was there anything specific from either of you guys, I would say, in the NL or anything else that you have a note?
I guess how much do people follow our, or really yours and Brett's suggestions about the order to take these players? Did you notice any surprising deviations?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because we don't have ADP.
Right.
Someday.
Working on it, guys. So we can only really tell from, you know, how many, from who was taken where. I would say there were some aspects of this that made me think, oh, you know, people who play score sheet at least do follow the draft to a certain extent. And at least somebody in the league, like, follows the draft fairly closely. For instance, you know, Kyle Tucker was a little lower than you'd expect, but he's a high school player, so people at least knew that. Fulmer passed Dylan Tate, which is an interesting
decision. I mean it's only by a handful.
Yeah, and it's hard to say if that's anything real.
So I think there's also an interesting drop off between like the top 8 guys. So it's Dansby Swanson, Brendan Rodgers, Alex Bregman, Ian Happ, Carson Fulmer, Dylan Tate, Andrew Benintendi, you know who I'm talking about, and Kyle Tucker. Benintendi.
I believe you mean Nintendo DS.
Yeah. those guys were all rostered in over 100 new AL or NL leagues, respectively, for their league. And then the next closest guy is at like 73, 71, and it just drops off really steadily from there. It seems like that's at least some collective score sheet wisdom saying it's only the top half of the first round that's really worth taking a serious gamble on. And for the most part, the rest of the guys that we see floating up this list are pitchers that are not recent draftees and have some sort of short-term dividend, or are they like resurfacing prospects, basically, right?
Yeah, and I think the one exception is Brady Aiken, who was actually owned in a lot of AL leagues to begin with. So he wasn't picked in a lot of leagues this time around. But he's up to about the same percent owned as Carson Fulmer already. It's interesting. I was a little surprised that, let's say, Garrett Whitley wasn't taken in as many leagues. I was very surprised that Tyler J was not taken in as many leagues as he's owned in only 35% of leagues right now. I mean, if you listen to the podcast, neither Brett or I were fans, and Brett in particular actually knows what he's talking about. So that's a, but you know, to see that his percentage was so low, even though he was the ninth pick, for instance, and relatively strong consensus suggests that there was some wisdom of crowds around that. I was surprised to see Daz Cameron so low.
He was the guy that I was going to ask about, because he's got the round 1A as opposed to round 1, and I'm wondering if, you know, that might have scared some people off.
Yeah, it seems like Daz Cameron is going to be available in a lot of your leagues, and, you know, I think we were suggesting in the last draft to take Daz Cameron. If you didn't get the chance last time around, I think we're going to get to the August supplemental or the July supplemental next week. We'll probably get to the August supplemental in August, I think.
If only there were a calendar online that you could book in.
Or anywhere. Anywhere, really.
Maybe in one of those emails.
But,
yeah, there's a 4 to 5 chance that Daz Cameron is available if he's eligible in your league. So.
And because the picks are starting to get a little cheap, especially if you're not contending, that might be a place where you might want to dump a pick. But we'll get into detail on that, things like that. Later. I was surprised to see, to some degree, like the back half of the draft followed form, that people would just take the next player off the draft board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you think that's people just drafting off of the MLB draft results and not really knowing a ton about the player specifically?
Yeah. I mean, I think there is a little bit of that, at least.
I know, that's how I ended up with Evan Longoria back in the day.
there are worse fates.
I know, but I mean, I remember I had my heart set on Andrew Miller because, you know, he's like this big lefty pitcher, and I remember you guys sniped me.
Or UNC, yeah.
You guys sniped me in that league. I was like, well, I guess I'll just take the highest available draftee. Got him.
Well, and now you have a podcast, so. Yeah, I think we'll get into more details about this next week when we talk about who to draft. But it was interesting to see who was and wasn't taken, and I think it speaks well to the level of knowledge in the score sheet community, which I guess may make us redundant.
Yeah,
or it's because everyone listens to our podcast.
That's probably it.
That has to be it.
All right. Anything else, or should we move on to some questions that come from our mailbag captain?
Ooh.
Is the mailbag captain excited?
Mailbag captain's always excited.
Sounds like a personal problem.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we want to. We thought, I think, that last month's review of a couple of your teams went well. At least we enjoyed it. I don't know if you, the general public, enjoyed it, but you're not podcasting, and we are.
Right? At least two people enjoyed it because they wrote in asking us to do their teams. So,
yeah. Well, they either enjoyed it or just wanted us to go through their teams.
Correlation and causation.
So we're getting, we're really getting close to that one-to-one customer service that we are known for. If you, I didn't even do the begging for questions, but you know, we do want to hear from you, and we actually do take questions off the air as well. So please feel free to email us at scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com with any questions you might have, or if you'd like to let us know if we can look at your team next time we do this, in case we do this another time, or if you want to just let us know, oh, I actually hate this format, or I hate you. Don't email that. Don't email that. But scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com for anything else. So, who, mailbag captain, who are the lucky teams? And can you help set us set up team number one, let's say?
Sure. So let's start with Jacob's team in NL340, if that works for you guys.
So everyone following along at home, pull out your phone.
Yep.
And look up PNL340.
Unless you're driving. Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're driving. If you're, I take this back. If you're driving, just ask Siri to read off the team roster for you. Siri, what is the roster for Team 11 in NL340?
The two teams we're going to talk about this week, I think they're tied a little bit. I don't know if you guys saw the same connection that I did, but Jacob's team is in third place in his division out of four. He's 42-41, mm-hmm. 13 games out of first in his division. The Pythag seems to match up. His team's given up 318 runs and has scored 315. I won't go through his entire team, I guess, but he's got Jordan Zimmerman, Matt Harvey, Steven Strasburg are his notable pitchers.
And sorry, just to back up a bit, 13 games out of first, but one team is running away with that division. He's actually, I believe, only three games out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, and so that's the point I guess I wanted to get at with you guys.
Sure.
It's sort of an interesting question what to do with a team when, you know, let's face it, you're not going to win your division at this point, but to be, you know, the fourth best team to get the wild card, it seems pretty doable.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on what the question is that you're trying to answer.
Well, what would you do with the team in that sort of situation? The question is, so you're not, you know, let's say you agree you're not going to be the best team in the league this year, but you think you can make the playoffs. You think you have a good shot at it. Would you go for it? Or would you, you know, start playing a little for next year? Maybe not tank the season, but start making a little moves with an
eye. I was going to say, we're getting dangerously close to the controversial tanking discussion. I mean, personally, my goal is always to win the league. So I think one of the things that Jacob here would specifically have to consider is whether or not he would be able to match up well against his divisional rival that's been basically running away with the league. He's already played his divisional rival 8 times this year, and he is 0-8, which is not good. That is easily the most lopsided set of records I think that I found for his league. And it could be that this is a league adversary that decided to use that nefarious prefer to face feature and stack the deck against Jacob, or just unlucky. But I feel like 90% of the listeners out there are going to go for it if they're in that situation. They're close enough to the playoff spot. The team's definitely solid. So I think we should probably tackle Jacob's team from the perspective of what can he do to improve it between, say, like now and the end of the month, or maybe like mid-August, I guess, around the trade deadline, to give himself the best chance to make the playoffs, and if he does, to succeed in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Jared, I think you should probably set Jacob's team in a moment, but I do want to speak generally for a second first. Just to answer the question, there is one other factor to whether you should go for it, and that's the number of teams that are competing with you for that spot.
Yeah.
So in this case, he is there's one team that's three games ahead, and there is another team that is tied with him. And then there are a couple more teams that are two games in back of him that seem to be sinking into the sea a little bit. So I think because there's, I would say, about a one in three shot of getting to the postseason, I would also take those odds in this case.
I agree with all that.
And try to go for it. And, you know, I think that's something to think about because I don't remember the exact situation the next time around, but I think we'll get to a slightly different scenario later.
Yes.
But, Jared, so why don't you set the team next?
Well, one thing real quick, still in the macro, yeah, if you don't mind. First, I would take the under on the 1-3 because, I mean, the teams that are behind them are like five games out. That's a couple. There's still time to have a couple good weeks for those teams.
Sure.
And I guess the second point, so, you know, really in this league, it's one team's running away.
Yeah.
And everyone else is about the same. The team that's running away has given up 100 fewer runs than every other team. In theory, is a
yeah, that team looks good.
It's got a great pitching stuff, but, you know, you look at it, and if a couple guys go down with injuries, then the offense can't support that. So I just something to think about.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like an invincible juggernaut, the strong team, although it does seem like a very strong team. Congrats to the owner. I would take the slight under, but I think the teams behind were playing under their a little over their head. I think Jacob, in this case, has a relatively strong team, which, again, we should probably get to. But I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all answer, although we would probably be more inclined to bail on a team than the average owner.
Yeah. Okay, so Jacob's team, his starters include Jordan Zimmermann, Matt Harvey, he's got Alex Wood, Steven Strasburg, Robbie Ray, Nicasio, Steve Matz.
Steve Matz.
He's got a...
So, fun story, not to derail this too much. I was going to go to this Sunday's game for Steve Matz's City Field return, his second game at City Field. Going with a friend, so we were like, let's just... You know, I'm pretty sure we're going to this game. Let's just check the weather, just in case, you know, like, let's give it another day just to make sure the weather is fine. Today, we're like, finally, it is 90 degrees, you know, it's 90 degrees, it's a little hot, but I started like researching where the shady areas of City Field are. I was like, okay, we're going to do it. Let's put down those $20, those hard-earned $20 on a ticket. Just went to Roto World right before I did. Steve Matz, obviously, out with a oblique injury for the next month and a half, like the Metsiest, Mets story that I could have come up with. So that is my breaking news. Sorry. So
yeah,
Zimmermann, Harvey, Wood, Strasburg. Well, I guess Andrew Heaney actually has had a pretty good start of things so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so in the bullpen, sorry to have cut you off.
No, it's fine. His bullpen's got four or five guys, mostly righties. Catching, he's got Miguel Montero and Nick Hundley. First, he's got Duda and Darren Ruff. He's got Jerko, Kike Hernandez. At third, it looks like Matt Duffy with...
Prado coming back, too.
Yeah, Prado. He's got Hanley Ramirez, Correa, Addison Russell, Springer, Polanco, Yelich, Scott Van Slyke for his outfield.
Yeah. So do you have any immediate suggestions? I got one in mind.
Second baseman?
Oh.
You think he's playing Russell at second base?
Yeah, I think he's playing Addison Russell at second base, but I think you trade Addison Russell for a second baseman.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to get a second baseman that's better than Addison Russell?
Yeah. Because literally all of them are.
Well, right. Okay. Right now, maybe. But
yeah, exactly. Well, if you're going for it, like, what do you have to pull the trigger on?
You have to give that up.
Could
go get DJ LeMahieu.
Right, because, the other question is, like, how many years do you intend to nurse Addison Russell before he becomes a plus player?
Yeah, and or play him behind Hanley and Carlos Correa and, at some point, Corey Seager.
Yeah, he's doing okay for himself.
He is flush with shortstops.
Good job, Jacob. What, you couldn't get J.P. Crawford? All right, fine.
He probably also needs some help in the outfield, right, with Springer.
Yeah, well, that was what I was originally thinking. Was sorry to have cut you off, but Addison for an outfielder. But I realized second base is. Well, you know what? I think Prado is coming. I should probably do a modicum of research, but I think Prado is coming back fairly soon. And in which case, I would probably stick Prado at second. Yeah, he's just began a rehab assignment today. Today being July 8th for anyone listening to this in the future. Ninth. Oh, sure. But it's not August. That's for sure. Anyway, so I would... I think Russell is the piece that I would immediately look to move. The highest value piece on the board that could get you something that would push your team forward.
And that's because Correa may have higher value, but you don't think he's worth trading?
I don't think you're getting equivalent value for Carlos Correa unless somebody has decided to kidnap Mike Trout, move him to the National League, and turn it... Well, I guess that's called Bryce Harper, right?
Yeah. So the other thing, I don't know if you're looking at this, but he's going to have... once Correa matriculates to like major league eligibility, he's going to have 3 crossovers with Springer and Hanley and Correa. And then presumably Haney also will...
I would cross that bridge when I come to it, but
so I was going to suggest that he considers moving Hanley and or think about the potential of selling Springer somewhat low for win now value and sort of alleviate some of the crossover burden at least going into the off season. Caveats apply, and I guess it's fair to give the disclosure. We own Springer, and were asked about him and said basically we're not going to sell him any cheaper than we would have before he got hurt. I said that before even asking you guys because that was the answer. But it could be a situation where the stars align for Jacob that Springer's the right guy to move since he is a crossover. He's young. He showed... plenty of promise and should have some pretty solid trade value.
Yeah, Hanley would be, you know, Hanley as an AL crossover is going to probably start becoming a pretty marginal keeper relatively soon.
Right, once he loses shortstop eligibility and gets that
206 outfield. 1.99 outfield. Yeah. The full Billy Butler experience. But, you know, I think Hanley right now for this year should be on a contender. And you might be right that makes Springer movable. Obviously, Gregory Polanco has had... I don't even know if Gregory Polanco is tradable. But...
638 OPS on the season, for those of you interested.
Yelich has also had a pretty lousy season, but I think a lot of that was back injury. He's had a relatively good month that seems more in line with the projections going forward.
You can definitely see how Jacob did a good job building this team up with a bunch of solid young arms and, you know, some up-the-middle talent. It's too bad that it hasn't quite panned out well, but I guess that's the way it goes.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to see these well-constructed teams, and looking through it in depth, it also makes me think, oh, this is a team that could go for it, that could go to the whip, and has a few pieces to trade that would be, I mean, that they would hurt a little bit when you trade them, but, you know, I think those are the kinds of players, especially since it seems like Jacob is the kind of owner who can draft the future versions of these guys as well.
Yeah, I had a friend that used to say that... you know, a trade is fair and balanced when you hesitate a little bit to click send on the offer. You know, it should hurt a little bit to send the guys that you're giving up, but you should want to do it anyway.
Yeah. And in particular, Addison Russell's a player I would look at moving.
All right. All
right.
Should we go to the next one?
Yeah, why don't we?
Next one comes from Sean, who's in AL 143. Team number 3. His team is 38-45, 12 games out of first in his division. Though he'd only be 4 games back in the other division. He's given up 370 runs, and he's scored 430 runs. So it looks a little unlucky.
I didn't realize Billy Beane was a score sheet owner.
Sean has named his team the TJs. It might be after TJ Hess, or it might be because all of his pitchers are hurt. I'm not sure.
or TJ House is hurt.
Could be both.
So he had been counting on, I think, Darvish and Stroman and Hunter Harvey, obviously.
Obviously.
But so he's got, he had traded for, he told us, Samardzija is his starter, key starter now. He's got Jesse Chavez, Hap, Alfredo, Simon, Adam Warren, Shane Green, I saw is coming back. He's got two guys in the bullpen, Scribner and Carpenter.
Smiley's coming back.
Oh,
I feel confident.
catching Russell Martin, first base Adrian Gonzalez, Kinsler at second with Jerks and Profar. He's got Carl Santana and Moustakas at third with Rua and Sano. He's got Stephen Drew at short with Lindor.
Is Stephen Drew at short?
And he's got this guy Mike Trout in the outfield with Dexter Fowler and Adam Eaton. So did I get everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I think of note, Josh Fegley's having a hell of a season, but I wouldn't have pulled him out in the first time.
So, what would you guys do with Sean's team?
So, this is a good example of the thing that Ian was talking about, where you want to take into consideration how many teams you'd have to leapfrog to make it. And not only is Sean looking at probably being a little bit unlucky, but having a team that's not quite as good as his competitors, but he'd also have to get over, what, at least three, maybe four other teams in order to make the playoffs. I don't know if it's clear, but I guess it's possible that this is top two wild cards go to the top two teams from either division, or it could just be the top two teams in each team in each division make the playoffs.
It says one wild card team will also make the playoffs.
So that's making up 11 games?
Yeah. He's been a little bit unlucky in one-run games, and obviously, like Ian was saying, the Pythagoras a little bit flip-flopped. But I think this is a team I would probably sell from, just because it's going to be somewhat a Herculean task to improve by enough that you can make up all that ground within the span of a few months.
Yeah, and first, to be fair to Sean, I have a feeling he sent this right before this week's results came in, which unfortunately this would be the kind of week that
helps make your decision.
Yeah. Sorry to say.
I think I forgot to say to Miguel Cabrera. Did I forget to say to Miguel Cabrera?
Yeah. No, you got everybody. They're hurt. They don't matter. Yeah. So. Right, so he has the last however many MVPs on his team, which I guess is why you think, oh, I should go for it, especially if your team is good and has a strong Pythagoras, and, like, you know, you got unlucky, or you have two relievers, and, like, you're just getting burned in one-run games over and over again. But, it's the same advice I would give to Billy Beane when he asked me, you know, when he emailed scoresheet@baseballprospectus.com. Like, it doesn't matter how good your team is. You gotta blow it up, you know, or at least just see what you can move for 2016 value.
Yeah. So he's got Adrian Gonzalez, who would definitely be a good guy to think about moving. He's a crossover, but obviously he's been mashing this year and just getting up there. He's 33, so probably the right time. Want to trade him before he craters at all, because as a crossover, that's going to, like, really deflate his value.
Ben, do you immediately send out a league email on Mike Moustakas?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you're definitely selling at a local maximum of Moustakas' value. And he's also got Sano coming up, so presumably, I don't know. Well, and he has Santana, I guess. Santana's technically third base eligible.
Yeah,
I don't know. I guess you have to trade a third baseman. I can't say that I wouldn't trade Santana also, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, I think Santana is certainly the type of player who would go. The only thing about Santana is that he might not be having a good enough season to be worth it.
Yeah, that's true.
Moustakas
definitely is, so.
Yeah, I would look to move Jesse Chavez because I think he's a good pitcher who gets jerked around a lot, and I don't trust his long-term value as a starter. I would trade Jay Happ immediately. You will never have a better deal for Jay Happ. The AL leader in WAR.
Is he? He was, I know, the best Mariners pitcher in WAR when we checked last time.
Yeah. I assume now he's just leading the world at this point.
Yes.
You know, there are some assets there. And because the alternative, I think, would be, like, if you have some of these TJ players, to move the TJ players to non-contenders and just, like, take a loss on those trades.
Yeah, or give up some of the prospects that are still shiny.
But it just doesn't seem like the right move at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing he'd already like to take back that Samardzija trade. I think he said he gave up Springer for him, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it would be like for a team to regret a Jeff Samardzija trade so quickly. It's tough for me to visualize, but somehow I'll figure out how to do that. And, you know, and to immediately want to send Jeff Samardzija away, except you can't because he hasn't really been pitching all that well.
Is there any team that's traded for Jeff Samardzija and doesn't regret it right now? Like, the A's have to also regret it, right? Like,
yeah, the A's probably could not regret trading for Jeff Samardzija more.
Yeah. Well, I think
They managed to pay it forward and take all of the White Sox gold in return.
It is frustrating, though, to have Trout and Cabrera.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a solid team. And obviously he ran into horrible luck with injury. And maybe that's another reason that blowing it up is a little bit easier, at least in terms of, like, going forward. It's probably more fun to look forward to having those guys healthy and putting together a run where you've got all of the assets that you were counting on around and available, rather than trying to make a push without Yu Darvish or without Marcus Stroman. You know, missing several weeks of Miguel Cabrera.
Ben, do you ever trade Mike Trout?
Wow. Yeah, there will definitely be a day when I would trade Mike Trout. I don't think that day is coming anytime soon, though.
Would that day be in a year that starts with a 2-0-1?
A 2-0-1. Oh. Possibly. Especially in a hard 13, I can see a situation where another team offers you enough star-level players that you can't refuse the trade offer. But, you know, it's going to take, like, 4 All-Stars or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous. I think it's fair to say that no single player has ever had higher trade value than Mike Trout does right now. Except maybe Mike Trout last year.
And Barry Bonds in your mind.
Oh, man. I wish I had been playing Scoresheet back in the day when Barry Bonds was still playing.
So while Ben moves into reverie, anything else? Or should we call it?
I wish Sean the best of luck in his trading efforts.
Yeah, let's know how it goes. And if you please, again, send us your team. We'd love to talk about them. Scoresheet at baseballprospectus.com. Anyway, Ben, what is the best thing you saw this week?
Dude, I was so busy this week, I didn't even keep a checklist. So I got nothing. We filled out a bunch of paperwork for the mortgage. I'm trying to make sure everything's ready for the wedding. I didn't even, you know, I was like, We sat down to record, and you mentioned earlier on that your NBA thing was going to be the best thing you saw. And I was like, thinking to myself, crap, I totally forgot about the best thing I saw this week. So
I thought you texted me what the best thing you saw this week was.
Oh, it might have been. I guess, yeah, okay. So I think it was, you're talking about the Women's World Cup final.
Yeah.
And I was talking about that goal from midfield that Carly Lloyd put in. That was pretty dirty.
Yeah, is that a time? Should we just talk about it now? Jared, what's the best World Cup final you saw this week?
that was definitely going to be my best thing.
I think part of my problem is I've been jaded in the aftermath of all of the, like, women's sports, gender equality stuff that's dusted up. And that kind of bothers me that people feel like they need to defend women's sports, or that, like, there's still this discussion about it. Or that, you know, people are saying stupid, ignorant things like women's sports aren't exciting and that kind of thing. So, but yeah, the World Cup final was awesome. It was awesome that they won. Carly Lloyd just had a fantastic game. And it was good to see that the game was so well watched, even though it was more or less decided in the first 20 minutes or so. Jinx mongers aside, I sent Jared a text at one point that he's talking about when I said that I saw the best thing I saw this week. And I think he was nervous that I was going to jinx them.
My brother definitely jinxed a goal. He's like, oh, this is a boring game. Who wants to watch this for a final? It should be close. And literally 35 seconds later.
The self goal off of the defender's head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that made it a little bit more interesting, but I don't know.
Not much.
I mean, it was fine. I definitely kept it on, but did not pay as much attention as I was before they were up 4-0. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. In terms of exciting games, after the first 15 minutes, sure, it was not necessarily exciting. But I watch a lot of terrible teams, and even the teams that I do watch, when they occasionally do well, they never win anything. So, like, it was a very strange feeling to be watching this championship. You're like, well, no, my team's going to win this one. Like, it's going to happen. Right? It's not nerve-wracking at all.
Jared's not used to that.
It's a strange feeling. It's great. And, I mean, to your point about the gender equality stuff, I do, in case you missed it, when they were awarding the, you know, the medals after the game, you have to hand it to FIFA. They had hot chicks and miniskirts awarding the medals to these women players because it's always possible to get more tone deaf when you're FIFA. But yeah, there's so many people watch the game.
They should have had Chuck Blazer in a miniskirt.
FIFA just banned Chuck Blazer from any football stuff in the future, so they pretty much cleaned Chuck, I think.
It's the best thing FIFA saw that week.
Job well done. But yes, I think it was about the most watched soccer game in U.S. history, which is, I mean, amazing to think about. Because, I mean, the men's team has had some exciting stuff in the World Cup. But so I was trying to figure out what to compare it to. I think it was something on the order of 23 million people watched the game at its peak. And so I'm looking on Wikipedia here, the most watched regular season, the Caesar series finales. And that would come in at about 19th of all time, tied around with The Late Show with David Letterman and Saint Elsewhere, just ahead of MacGyver and Miami Vice, and
nice.
just below Golden Girls and Full House is where they ranks in the all-time series watched.
That is quite a pantheon.
Yeah, it's a kind of a fascinating list. ALF is 23 of all time. It was a simpler time.
Yes.
Matlock was 33. That I would not. Hold on. This is not true. Jake and the Fat
Jared,
Man is 36 of
Jared
all time.
Jared just, like, saw what? A new best thing this week.
How is Jake and the Fat Man like the top 36? This does not make sense to me. Yeah, but the other best thing
what
I saw.
What is the what's the highest MLS rating of all time?
Doesn't really
lower matter. Than Jake and the Fat Man.
Doesn't register on the scale.
Dogrier than a Jig and the Fat Man rerun, probably.
It's like Freddie Adu's debut.
MLS, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It'd probably be an MLS Cup, right? Probably. I don't know.
All right, so we'll research. So what is the best thing you saw this week? Sorry.
Well, the other thing is, I got a phone call from my mom last night at like 10, which is a little late for my parents.
Yeah.
So already I'm like, and then my mom calls and like I can tell that like it sounds like she's crying. I'm like, well, this is just not.
You got a bad.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Right. And so she's like, Jared, and I'm like, yes. And she says, you guys know the Vine or the GIF that's going around with the little kid who dunked the basketball and then it fell on his head, the hoop. Did you guys see this?
You can send it so we can
feel
watch.
Feel free to send. Yeah.
It was going around the internet like yesterday or today, and
I can imagine what it looks like.
My mom loves physical humor, in particular people getting hurt doing stuff. She's just like America's Funniest Home Videos just caters to her.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she was laughing so hard she was crying and had to call me at 10 to tell me about this GIF that she was watching. And she's like, and it was one of those that loops, so it just keeps looping. And
yeah,
she's like,
so she just got stuck in the loop.
She's like, Jared, I've been watching this for 25 minutes and every time it comes on, I laugh. I can't stop. She's like, Jared, my stomach is hurting from laughing so hard. So the best thing that I guess it's not stop, but it was the relief from having a phone call from your parent at 10 in the morning where it sounds like she's crying. It's just that she's just laughing at a GIF.
So congratulations to having none of your family members pass away. Good work, wife's family.
I thought you were going to say that Meredith was pregnant.
Oh. No, I didn't.
Spoiler alert.
I know.
Anyway, sorry. So the best thing I saw this week was Chris Paul sending a banana boat emoji, but covered that at the top of the cast. So I'll stick with baseball. It was great to see Jose Fernandez back.
Yeah.
I was really excited. It wasn't the best performance ever, but you know, he came back, he had a lot of energy on the crowd. You know, I would say Marlins Park was hopping. They had the sideline reporter, who I don't know, it's a new reporter this year, so I apologize to the Marlins fan. They posted her at, I guess none of you have been to Miami, but so they posted her at Cafe Versailles, which is like classic tourist cafe in Little Havana, a couple blocks from the stadium. And she was there to cover, you know, Marlins fever, or Jose Fernandez fever, as the most famous Cuban player returns to the majors, you know, in a time when that is a different experience than it's been in the past. So there was a genuine chance for Marlins fever. There was no Marlins fever. But she managed to eat, like, a pastry and then go to a restaurant nearby where she was meant to interview more Marlins fans, and also there were no Marlins fans and the Marlins game wasn't on the TV, but she ate more. So we just got like a nice little food tour of Little Havana, and I like that as like the side game. But you know, he looked good. The curveball was back. His mother was there in the stands, and his grandmother came to see it. I don't know when his grandmother came over, but the probably the best thing I saw this week was Jose Fernandez's grandmother has a jersey, or I guess an actual jersey. That's Abuela 16. Abuela, and then Jose's uniform number. Solid work.
That's pretty good.
I kind of want to get that.
It says grandmother on the back.
Yeah, and then Jose Fernandez got into one. And hit a nice little home run off Matt Cain, who also came back, but who cares about that? John C. Reilly. Anyway. No, he's good too. And as we discussed last week with Stephen Matz, when a pitcher does anything worth mentioning at the plate, the stadium goes bonkers, which is why I am pro whatever it is we have today. So, guys, I sent you a picture of Jose Fernandez right after hitting the home run in the Skype chat. This will be at 134.16. If anyone wants to check me on this, I think the best thing I saw this week, Jose Fernandez is toweling himself off after the Skype chat, and he has, I want to say...
I see it now.
A great, an unusual birthmark, right? On his left arm. A surprising... I checked to see if anyone else caught this. I think I might be breaking news here. But nobody is listening to the second hour of a podcast, so I think I'm not getting Jose Fernandez in that much trouble. But if anyone wants, to go to 134.16 on MLB TV, you can check my work.
I can't see it.
And Jose's. Jared's blind. Jared, he's got a bunch of stuff that looks like it could be dirt on his elbow.
Oh, I see.
But it's a little bit more dark than dirt would be from a baseball field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right above some glowing thing that may or may not be sunscreen. It's like sweat, but...
It could be sweat.
Yeah.
He is toweling himself off. He must be very sweaty.
He just hit a home run.
It's Miami.
A very sweaty experience. Yeah, it's very warm.
It's hot. Miami.
Yeah, and you just rub your lower forearm in dirt every so often.
Especially around the elbow. That's what they mean by elbow grease. So you got to get like actual grease on there.
So the best thing I saw this week is the 8-game suspension. I am not giving Jose Fernandez, somebody of merit listens to this podcast.
I like it. That's a nice catch, Ian.
No problem.
I do have one more thing for you guys. Discussion. Did you see the Ben Affleck news today?
No. Why would I care about Ben Affleck news?
So, Gone Girl movie starring Ben Affleck.
And Ben Affleck's penis.
I didn't see that movie.
Yeah. So it came out today that Fincher is claiming that Affleck delayed production for 4 days. So that's a long time in a movie filming, delay of 4 days, because there was a scene in a New York airport where his character was supposed to wear a New York Yankees hat. And Ben Affleck said, no, I am not wearing a New York Yankees hat. He said, I just will not do it. He says, it's going to become a thing. No, I'm not going to do it. So apparently for 4 days, they just shut down production while they had this debate.
Nice.
And they resolved it by having him wearing a Mets hat.
Nice.
So, I mean, first, like, that probably could have been resolved a lot sooner, I think. But so, like, you know, I got to say, I kind of respect Ben Affleck for taking a stance there.
Yeah. That was nice.
So, I have a million thoughts, and I'll try to convince them. So the Mets are the official team for murderers?
Well, it was going to be Yankees.
Seems right.
Spoiler alert.
All right. Yeah. He's a Yankee fan would never do this. You're a Mets fan. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's him. Yeah. You just get into character. Do you think Ben Affleck's method acting was just watching the Yadier Molina home run over and over again? For like a day and a half until he just got in the mood.
I want to be that famous and powerful. I can say, nope, I'm just not going to wear this Yankees hat. You can't. No, it's not going to happen.
Well, the good news, Jared, is that you are not famous and not powerful, and therefore you never have to wear a Yankees hat.
We have good news and bad news.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not getting paid tens of millions of dollars to not wear that Yankees hat.
Yeah, nobody's ever going to care.
This
just came out? This news just came out?
So I feel like I had heard it before when they were talking about filming stuff, but not that it had shut down production for numerous days. Like, there had been a dispute about it, but like, to shut down production even for a few hours is actually like, costs a lot of money and weighs a lot of people's time. So
I'm sure he can afford it. Plus now he can die and go to heaven.
Well, I mean, he's still a Red Sox fan. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
But dude, he's a Red Sox fan with principle.
Oh yeah. Man.
I I'm just impressed that I kept a straight face for as long as I did. I got it out without cracking up. All right.
I just wish that they got like Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera to come to fly to Ben Affleck's house in a banana boat. Until he was forced to change teams. We should check Mariano Rivera's Twitter for emoji. All right. On that note, we're going to full circle. Thanks to everyone once again for listening. Feel free to email us at scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com with any questions, any fan theories, or World Cup tips, anything that you might have. On behalf of Ben Murphy and Jared Weiss, I'm Ian Lefkowitz. Thanks again, and have a great day.
Three true outcomes, they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes, Ian, Ben, and Jared. Scoresheet baseball can be tricky if you don't possess the edge. They'll call it the way they see it, you'll rarely hear them hedge. They each possess the knowledge, honed from years of play. You want to win at Scoresheet, you're going to want to stay with three true outcomes. They want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes, the number one independent score sheet podcast in the U.S. of A.